From Spark and Anvil and Cardforge, this is The End Player in Chapter 1 of the Cardforge cast. This drama uses an AI-generated voice, voiced via Gemini 2.5.
The great hall of the Cardforge Academy buzzed with the clatter of forks and the murmur of 100 conversations. But around one small table, there was a circle of perfect silence. In the center of the table sat a single abandoned plate. On that plate sat the last slice of Chef Fumble's galactic gâteau. It was a tower of blue sponge cake, held together by a questionable green jelly, and topped with a single wobbling candied star. No one wanted the last slice. Taking it meant you had to carry the big, sticky plate back to the kitchens. It was a chore disguised as a treat. From her quiet corner, the End Player watched with a gentle smile. She saw Maya edge toward the table, then pretend to tie her shoe. She saw Finn boldly march up to it, only to lose his nerve and grab a napkin instead. They were all stuck. The cake was a trick no one wanted to win. The End Player picked up her empty teacup and stood. She needed a fresh cup of ginger tea from the dispenser, which was, of course, right behind the cake table. She walked calmly toward the standoff. As she passed Finn, she murmured, "Oh, Finn, what excellent timing. Could you possibly hold my cup for a moment?" Finn, surprised, took the cup automatically. Now his hands were full. The End Player then turned to Maya, who was still pretending to fuss with her shoelace. "Maya," she said warmly, "that is a magnificent star. It would be a shame to let it go to waste." Maya looked up, flustered. Finn stood nearby, unable to act with his hands full of teacup. All eyes were on Maya. Pinned by politeness, Maya sighed, picked up the plate with a wobbly cake, and took the final slice. As she began her slow, sticky march to the kitchens, the End Player retrieved her teacup from a grateful Finn. The path to the tea dispenser was now perfectly clear. She had given Maya the trick, and in doing so, had won her own.
The End Player hadn't always understood this path. When she was small, she played a game called Stargazer with her grandmother at a small sun-bleached table in the garden. The cards were old and soft, the pictures of constellations faded from 1,000 shuffles. One afternoon, she was losing badly. She had one card left, the little bear, which she knew her grandmother needed to complete her set and win the game. But her grandmother held the North Star, the very card the young End Player needed to win herself. "I'm stuck, Nana," she had said, laying her cards down in frustration. "If I ask for the North Star, you'll know I have all the other stars in that family, but you need my little bear to win right now." Her grandmother had simply smiled, her eyes crinkling like old paper. "What happens if you just give it to her?" she'd asked. "Give it to you? But you'll win this hand." "I will," her grandmother agreed, tapping the deck. "But then it will be my turn to lead. I will have to play a new card from a new family. I will have to show you my plan. Are you sure that giving me one small win is the same as letting me win the whole game?" Frowning, the young girl thought about it. It felt wrong. It felt like losing. But she trusted her grandmother. On her next turn, she didn't ask for a card. Instead, she laid down the little bear and passed her turn. Her grandmother's eyes twinkled. She took the card, completed her set with a flourish, and laid it down. She had won the hand, just as the girl had feared. But now, as promised, she had to lead. She played a card from a family the girl hadn't even started collecting. It gave the girl perfect information. She knew what to ask for next, and the next. She won the next three hands in a row, and with them, the game. Her grandmother had just smiled and poured them both a glass of lemonade.
Her arrival at the Cardforge Academy was just as quiet. She carried a single bag and a small, polished wooden box. Dean Finesse, a woman whose hair was somehow both perfectly coiffed and exploding in 10 directions at once, met her at the main entrance. The dean was in a state of low-grade panic. A delivery of rare, shimmering cardstock had been placed directly in front of the main auditorium, blocking the entrance for the annual student orientation. Two groundskeepers, burly men named Gus and Stan, were arguing about how to move it. "If we push it left," Gus grumbled, "it'll block the library. And if we push it right," Stan countered, "it'll block the dorms. We're stuck." The end player set down her bag. She walked not to the delivery, but to a small, forgotten service trolley parked by a nearby hedge. It had one wobbly wheel and was covered in leaves. "Excuse me," she said to Gus, her voice calm and clear. "Would you mind helping me with this? I think if we push it over here, it might be useful." Gus, confused but glad for a different problem to solve, helped her wheel the rickety trolley to the right of the large delivery, directly in the path to the dorms. "There," the end player said with a nod. "Perfect." Stan stared. "But you've just blocked the path to the dorms yourself." "Have I?" she asked. Now there was only one clear path to move the big delivery, left, toward the library. With no other choice, Gus and Stan shoved the heavy cardstock to the left. It was hard work, but it was a decision. The entrance to the auditorium was now clear. Dean Finesse watched, her chaotic hair seeming to settle for the first time all day. The end player hadn't solved their problem. She had simply given them a new, worse problem, which made the original solution the only one possible. She had made them lead right where she wanted.
In her workshop, which smelled of old books and chamomile tea, a student named Leo slumped in his chair. He was playing a practice duel against a training automaton, and his side of the board was a disaster. The automaton had a huge creature, the Gilded Griffin, ready to attack. Leo had nothing but a few weak cards. "It's over," he sighed, reaching to scoop up his cards. "Is it?" a soft voice asked. The end player stood behind him, observing the board. She pointed a long, elegant finger at one of Leo's cards. It was a simple utility card called Gift of the Magpie. All it did was let his opponent draw an extra card. It was useless. Worse than useless. "You want me to play that?" Leo asked, bewildered. "That just helps it. The griffin will attack, I'll lose my last shield, and then it gets another card? I'll lose twice." "The griffin will indeed attack," the end player agreed calmly. "And you will indeed lose your shield. But then what must the automaton do? After it wins the trick, and after it draws its new card?" Leo stared at the board. The automaton's programming was simple. After an attack, it had to play the new card it just drew. It was a rule. The card it would draw, thanks to Gift of the Magpie, would be the top card of its deck. Leo knew the automaton's deck. He knew the top card was a moment of reflection, a card that forced the player to skip their next attack. His eyes went wide. He played the Gift of the Magpie. Just as he predicted, the Gilded Griffin attacked. Leo's last shield shattered. The automaton won the trick. It then drew its card, the moment of reflection, and was forced to play it immediately. Its massive Gilded Griffin stood down, unable to make the final winning attack. The automaton had been forced to lead, and it had led directly into Leo's only hope. The board was now stable. Leo had a chance. He looked back at the end player, who simply gave a small, knowing nod.
The other students had left, but Leo remained, staring at the game board. The Gilded Griffin and his own small, clever cards were frozen in their final positions. He had won, but it still felt strange, like he had seen a magic trick. "So the point is to lose on purpose?" he asked quietly. The end player was stacking a set of game pieces made of smooth, dark river stones. They made a soft clicking sound as she placed them in their wooden box. She paused and looked at him, her expression warm and patient. "Not quite," she said. "You didn't lose. You simply gave your opponent a choice. A choice that felt like a victory, but which ultimately served your own plan." She held up one of the dark, cool stones, turning it over in her palm. It was perfectly smooth. She placed it gently into his hand. "You aren't losing," she murmured, her voice barely above a whisper. "You're just inviting them to lead. Sometimes the strongest move is to step aside and let them walk right where you need them to be."
You've been listening to a Spark and Anvil chapter.
written by the Spark and Anvil writing team for ages 9 to 14. Spark and Anvil is a 501c3 public charity. Apps stay free forever. Curriculum aligned to the End Player. Released under Creative Commons BY-NC-SA 4.0 for educational reuse. Visit Spark and Anvil for the full transcript.